That's drummer, composer, arranger, big band leader, author, and educator, Bobby Sanabria with his big band with New Yorican Son. Recorded live at Manhattan's Birdland in 1999, it's track number 4 on his 2000 album, Bobby Sanabria Live and in Clave. Bobby Sanabria, who also is a scholar of Afro-Cuban and Latin jazz and bebop, continues to elevate and promote these musical genres and the geniuses who created them. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. The best open forum on the planet awaits you and your comments and analyses of major news events or subjects you think are worthy of further discussion and debate. And we do that by calling 888-874-4888 to start the conversation on your terms. You are driving the proverbial bus. Okay. This has been a very crowded news week. Lots and lots of things happening. It would be good for you to help put these things in perspective from your particular point of view and offer us some ideas, some opinions, some information that you think might broaden our view and cause us to rethink our positions even, maybe even change our minds. But let's hear from you, 888-874-4888. And while we wait for your calls to come in, I just want to thank you very much. I've gotten quite a bit of correspondence I have to catch up on, and that has to do with the broadcasts this week. Many people found them to be particularly enlightening, and certainly yesterday I got a fair share of reaction to my commentary. I call it a commentary, very politely calling it a commentary. It was a rant. It's okay. I could live with it. But the idea was to put before you an entirely different way of seeing things. Because, you know, we live in this bifurcated world in the United States where the assumption is, if you listen to mainstream media, there's only one way to see things, and it's the way they tell you. And, of course, there are people who have entirely different points of view because they are entirely different. They're treated entirely differently from the American people. And it galls me every time I hear that phrase, especially during these political times. In this political season, you'll hear more than enough references to the American people, as if we are supposed to suddenly believe that we actually are one people, and we're not. We never have been. So let's hear what you have to say about the events of the week and your ideas coming out of those events and the news headlines. 888-874-4888. Let's start with Harvey from Berkeley. Hello, Harvey. How are you?
Good, and how are you, wonderful Utrice?
Thank you, wonderful Harvey.
Well,
what's your consideration today?
Well, I'd like to talk about another reason to just say no to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. With the Trans-Pacific Partnership, we won't be able to stop the West Coast coal shipments to China. They're trying to put in these coal ports now that can ship out the coal here on the West Coast, and it's the worst. It's the worst thing. You know, we export the coal to China and we import the toxic pollution. Yeah, I'm sure you've seen pictures of the air pollution in China. It's terrible. I think over 1 million people a year die from it. And besides that, the coal is the largest producer of carbon dioxide emissions, which is creating the heating up of the atmosphere and climate destabilization. It's just loaded with toxins. Burning coal is also the leading cause of smog, acid rain, and toxic air. And some of the toxins that are in coal is when we burn coal is sulfur dioxide. Coal plants in the United States are the leading source of sulfur dioxide, which takes a major toll on public health. Nitrogen oxide, which causes ground-level ozone and smog, and particulate matter that gets trapped in the lungs. But there was a article the other day, and it said imported air from China, mercury from Asia contributes 20% to 30% of the poison deposited in the U.S. We know this pollution impacts all the way from Alaska to Southern California. Plus, it blows inland, you know, so it's coming over into the rest of America as well. But besides mercury, there's other harmful pollutants in there, and one of them is uranium. When uranium is locked up in coal, and so when they burn coal, it releases the uranium into the atmosphere, and uranium is a toxic radio. These toxic radioactive isotopes, radioactivity sterilizes all life. There's no safe amount. And so also here in America, I think President Obama is going to look at the sale of coal mined on federal lands, because essentially federal lands are taxpayer owned. So we're selling taxpayer owned coal and we're exporting it to be burned in China, and then we import the pollution. So I say, let's stop the TTP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, in the name of the men and women and children of America and the world. And it really is time to get healthy. And I say, let's get solar, because solar creates no emissions, which are detrimental to us. And so, just say no to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Unless you want to take a big lungful of radioactive isotopes into your lungs.
So thank you for your call, yeah. Harvey, and for getting us started today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
888-874-4888 is Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. From Chelsea, Marvin, you're on the air. Okay. From Brooklyn, David, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, you chiefs. It's nice to speak to you again.
Thank you.
And I, it's a pleasure. I don't know if you got that email I asked you about my book, and I wanted to send you a copy, but we'll talk about that later. I'll send you another email. What I would like to talk about is all those points of analysis that have been done with Obama's talk in the Congress. I feel that we haven't cut to the chase. And that I'm saying that because we have to recognize just what it is. This is a man that has made a Faustian bargain with the ruling class to let him slide by and become president. The newspapers said, all right. The ruling class said, okay. And in the black community, people were so happy to see someone with their same phenotype get into position as the chief executive officer of the world power, United States, the empire, and having someone look like them. So, you know, we can talk about what he said about this and that and other, but the point is, that's what he is. He is a representative of those who rule, and he doesn't represent our interests. So, you know, we need to think about that. We can talk about this, that, and the other, but that's where it stands.
What do you think his role is going to be, continue to be, for this last year in office and even after he leaves?
Well, I would imagine that he will not do anything to really significantly damage the interests of those who rule, the oligarchy that is in charge. And after office, I would suspect that he can become a very rich person, you know, making 15-minute, 20-minute speeches and for a big honorarium. He can do that. And, you know, I don't see any hope in him doing anything that is really going to change things. You know, we have this hope and change. No, that was just, you know, rhetoric. No, there's no change is going to come. I hope he does something to release all these people they've got locked up in the prisons. That would be a positive step. Maybe he can get away with doing that just when he's getting ready to get out of the White House. But that's what I think. And, you know, things are getting worse with these neoliberal policies that are expanding in all areas. I am particularly concerned with the so-called education system. Really, it's a training system. And what's happening with the workers and whatnot, it's things are not getting better under his administration.
Well, let's take a look at the flip side of the coin. You see no change in Obama and the Obamas of the world. Do you see a change at all on the flip side of the coin, on the part of people?
Well, you see, the way I see it, the ruling class will do whatever it can to interrupt the possibility of a revolt. It might give up something if things get bad enough for people to really revolt. So just as it did in the New Deal, and, you know, that's what it's going to do. But if we just go on as we're going, they're just going to enrich themselves more and more and more. They're not going to stop. They can never have enough. And the more they can take away from the rest of us, the more they get. So that's what it is. They don't really care. People have to understand those in power are interested in their own interests and enriching themselves and not really for the good of the masses of people that live here. And people have to get it. And I don't understand how the persons in the United States can involve themselves in two corporate capitalist parties and not see that that's absolutely a waste. And, you know, that's the way I feel about that.
Well, thank you for calling and expressing your view. From Mount Vernon, Jason, you're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Jason, you're on the air.
I have been here in a while, and thank you for taking my call. I haven't been on the phone in a while, and I got to say, it's very disappointing, Obama's term in office, the second term. It's as we can clearly see, we don't need any peer reports or any indicators about the systematic oppression of people of color and the systematic oppression of people in general. We become debt slave citizens, and the sooner that the general public, those who are walking around, going to work, eating and drinking and having a pleasant time and going to the movies in a zombie state of mind of consumerism, the sooner they jump out and walk out of that sleeping dead sleep of unconsciousness, the better it is for everyone. But of course, we have a lot of different devices and mechanisms in place to prevent that from happening. As the previous caller said, the oligarchs or the cabal or the elite may give us scraps of crumbs if there is enough of an uproar, but that should not be satisfactory because they always will trick the general public into, I would call it, re-phoenixing. a re-phoenixing of their matrix 50-dimensional system of you as a human being obligated and coerced to be the transmitting utility. As a transmitting utility, you're obligated to use their Federal Reserve notes, which is a promise to pay. And these Federal Reserve notes are not backed by any gold. They've been off the gold market, off the gold standard since 1972 with Nixon. And all these things are known to the public. It's just that we're in a comatose zombie state where the mechanisms that use racial tensions, racial suppression, and systematic disenfranchisement is one tool. The actual dismissing and ignoring the 270 or 240 years of free labor and not compensating those who were descendants of so-called Africans, kidnapped Africans because we weren't slaves, kidnapped Africans for free labor. Those things have to be addressed now. The Black Lives Matter movement has to pressure these so-called candidates, Clinton or Bernie Sanders, to have that part of the agenda. I can go on and on and on, but we have to have these different platforms. And I do appreciate your show because although there are times of great deal of platitudes, you do have substance. And you are piggybacking, and there's not too much of audience, not much of an audience turnoff from the Gary Noel show. And Gary Noel does his best, but I wish Gary Noel would allow people to speak on the show without going into these high platitudes, which exhaust the time of the show and no one can speak.
Well, everybody conducts the show the way he or she sees fit. And one of the things that happens at BRN is that freedom is given to all programmers to conduct the show in the way they see fit. But let me ask you, you have a handle, you seem to have a handle on the cause, I mean the effect. What is it going to take, in your view, for a concerted resistance to all of the things that you have outlined? What will it take for people to wake up? Are you there? Okay. Jason is gone. Okay. All right, from New York, Chris, you're on the air. Hello, Chris?
Hello, can you hear me at all?
Yes, I can hear
you. Oh, good afternoon, Ms. Lee, and good afternoon to the PRN staff and listeners.
Thank you so much for that. Thank you.
At the beginning of the show, you mentioned something about America, and I personally feel sometimes when they do say the American people, they mean specifically white America. This is just my feeling. This is the impression I get when they start saying American people. And speaking for myself, and even in my mind at times, it triggers the picture of a white person when they say America or Americans. And I was having a conversation with my son recently about that effect of the image that the word American triggers in the in the minds of people when they're watching the president or the news or anything. And my son goes to St. John's University here in Queens, and he's a member of a group called HARIA, which is like the African American Society, and I forget the entire title, but it's an African American group that they have at the college. And I asked him recently, because he went to the Million Man March, and a couple of the other groups from his school went to that last march. And I said, well, what are the other groups? And there was a group for Caribbeans, there was a group for Africans, and there was a group for African Americans, all separate groups. And I'm only mentioning these three. There's about two more, I think. And on a basic level, in my opinion, I think that maybe we could change what, maybe calling ourselves African Americans or Caribbean Americans, it may be triggering the same thing in other people's minds, that we are other or outside or as if we are guests here in this country. And we're not all here on visas. You know, I'm Black American. I was born here in this country, and I call myself American, and without going into my family tree, but I think that it might be in our best interest to start calling ourselves collectively American instead of meeting in separate auditoriums with our separate groups.
Okay.
I don't know what your take would be on such a...
Well, of course, you're pointing to an issue that has plagued the African diaspora for quite some time, and it is understandable. I explain sometimes to folks that it used to be, said as a kind of joke. So what do you call yourself,
mm-hmm.
in a derisive way? What do you call yourself? People would ask me, what are black people supposed to be called? The fact is, that is part of the process, I think, of awakening and building a consciousness. And it is natural. Any group of people that had gone through the experience that people of African ancestry have gone through naturally will come to this issue, and we're not singular in this respect. Jews had a similar issue. Do you call yourself Jews? Do you call yourself Shemites, Semites, Israelis? All kinds of discussions about what you do. And this persists in most any population that over a long period of time had gone through this business of displacement, this business of scattering, and
mm-hmm.
by violent means, and having to now come to terms with the question of identity. What is your identity? So it is natural that people are coming to terms. It's very slow, but this is part of the process of returning to oneself. You have to discover who you are. And one of the ways that is done is by, the cultural information that you have. So you start there. Sometimes other people start elsewhere. I always have insisted that we should see the bigger picture, but who am I to do this?
I can't tell people how to
come to terms with an identity.
I guess what I'm trying to find out is what would be the big picture that we could be aiming towards, and not to judge them at all, because I'm 37, and to be honest, I grew up in Queens. I live in Lawrence now, but I grew up in Queens, and between myself and the people around me, we were nowhere near as active as the young people that I see today. And so I don't want to say this to suggest to them what they should do. I'm just asking.
No, I get that. You're posing a really profound question, is what I'm saying. I get it. And there's no easy answer. It's a matter of people making the effort to understand that this is a process of returning to one's identity. And for some people, that's a very, very hard thing to do. And they're unwilling to do it because a lot of things are involved. In a country where you are labeled and you are to adopt and adapt to that label, if you are the person on whom this demand is placed, you necessarily will see the world very differently from the person who belongs to the club that places the demand. So it takes time for these things to happen. I'll settle for an awakening of consciousness. I'll take that as a start.
And they seem to be more conscious than my generation was. But I did suggest to him to maybe raise the question at his next meeting, could they all meet together maybe once a month as opposed to consistently meeting separate?
Yes.
And I don't know. We just had this conversation actually two nights ago, so I'm going to see what happens. Out of curiosity.
That's a great conversation. It's great. And your suggestion is great.
Even with adults, it's sometimes hard to get us together because I'm trying to wrap my head around pooling income and you know, to purchase businesses or to purchase property or to purchase, you know, homes. And even that I find it's hard with the working adults to trust each other, you know, on basic levels. Like, we have the same problem, but we can't seem to get to the same solution. I don't know. But thank you so much. I appreciate all the time you let me have today.
Thank you,
I'll listen
Chris,
and
for calling.
Call again.
Very, very much enjoyed your contribution today. Thank you. From Rosedale, Jose, you're on the air.
This is my professor.
Hello, Jose. How are you?
Not bad. I wish you and the staff a great new year.
Thank you so much for that.
You know, it's moments like these that make me want to love you all the more. You have a way of explaining things to us that you have to be without a brain cell to not understand what you are saying, what you're telling us. And I just love you for that.
Oh,
and I want to digress just a little bit from what I really call you about, to what the brother was talking about a moment ago. You know, I am an African from the Caribbean. And I tell everyone that I classify myself as an African in America. I tell our people all the time, it doesn't matter whether you were born here, up south, down south, from the Caribbean, Africa, wherever. Once you're here in this country, you are subjected to the rules and all the things that the America is made up of. So I choose to consider myself an African in America. If we, for some reason, we want to talk to about something about a geographic something that have to do with my geographic origin, then we can talk about it. But otherwise, I am just an African in America experiencing what all Africans is subjected to in this country. We are a people here that the conquerors, the Europeans, believe that we have no rights that they are bound to respect. And I constantly work with my African, other Africans that I have to deal with, whether you be African-Americans or from wherever. And I always try to instill those values in them. We must constantly work towards that integration of our people. That other one that they talked about with black and whites and this and so forth, that was not the real integration. That was a mirage. The real integration process should be among us as Africans, wherever we come from. We have to constantly fight and understand that we are the friends. We are the providers, the supporters that we have been looking for. We are not going to find it with no one else. We have to demand it of ourselves. We have to love ourselves more than we love anybody else. And that is where our problem lies. So I hope the brother take that to heart and constantly work. Because any group of people that was subjected to the hundreds of years of what has been done to us as a people, it is a wonder that so many of us are still functional mad people, functional crazy people. And so we have to constantly work on our people. It is something that is not going to come overnight, but we have to work on it. So that is my advice to the young brother. And so, my professor, what I will call you about was this. I want to leave the political elimination process for a while and the money exchange season. And I would like to, since I'm a small island person, I come from an island where most of those islands believe that they are really independent. And I was reading an article recently about a whole bunch of accolades and so forth was heaped upon Jamaica because of the success of the stock exchange and all that kind of foolishness. And what I want to ask you is this. Maybe if you're not able to do it, you could bring someone on to explain to us what to us, the struggling people, the working people, the poor people, what to us these things that tell us about the stock exchange, how great they're doing, how well they're doing, and Jamaica has the most working stock exchange and all that kind of foolishness. And we are islands that are strictly dependent upon tourism and whatever other things it brings with us, with it. This is how we live. And all the hotels and the tourism amenities and so forth are in the hands of the plantation owners. Just as our ancestors lived in a period where they worked on the plantation, every aspect of the plantation and maintaining that, the money folks, it was our people, on the backs of our people. And it so is the hotel industry. Everything is in the hands of foreign overseas investors and some of the local ones with big money. And our people, again, is providing that labor and not even getting the proper benefits from these industries. So I am asking you, what do you see that the future holds for these islands that many of them, I believe, are going to be failed states, or maybe already some of them are failed states. But what do you see for the future of the economy of these small islands?
I'm glad you asked me such a simple, easy question. I agree with you about this, the Caribbean islands. Mm-hmm. For such small islands having such huge visions. I come from Trinidad, as you know, and yes. I always talk about the fact that, you know, here you have these small islands. People would never believe the speed at which these islands actually move. Mm-hmm. And the wrong direction.
Yes.
They have imported just about every awful aspect of life and adopted them to mm-hmm. their detriment, and mm-hmm. as if they don't understand or appreciate the fact that the negatives far outweigh the positives.
Yes.
And if you're going to have a stock exchange, it seems to me that you would want to have it uniquely tailored to what your culture says, what your history says, what your needs are, and so forth. But you're correct. A lot of what Jamaica is, quote, trading, unquote, it's really not to the benefit of Jamaicans, the same mm-hmm. as in any of the developing countries. You mm-hmm. you have this idea that the way you just pattern yourself after Wall Street, or you pattern yourself after another major stock exchange in Europe somewhere, and mm-hmm. it will work just fine. Well, of course, part of the recognition that is unstated is that you're dealing essentially, although you're in Jamaica, you are in fact dealing in the global economy, mm-hmm. as if that is supposed to be doing some good for the country. But I don't understand why we haven't had it in education, where we have mm-hmm. education tailored to the needs of people. We don't have it in commerce. We don't have it in all of these areas that are vital to day-to-day life mm-hmm. in the Caribbean. And we are still colonized people, yes. still very much a colonized sector of the world. Mm-hmm. And in the same way that we produced the materials that created empires, sugar and molasses and all the rum and all the other things that made Britain so great, mm-hmm. We still colonized people in the Caribbean yes. and elsewhere. The empire has not shrunk at all. It's just kind of changed a little to confuse people. And I don't know any Caribbean island that could say without some degree of shame that they're truly and unequivocally independent countries. It's yes. a joke.
Yes.
So, you know, somebody was saying to me, well, we're independent. I said, fine. Why don't you take out a dollar out of your pocket and look and see whose face is on it?
Exactly.
Queen Elizabeth is still there.
Yes.
and still have crown lands in your country that Britain owns. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's ridiculous. So the point I'm saying is that yet the Caribbean has produced such incredibly bright minds, extraordinarily brilliant people, who I believe were well suited to crafting in any field at all, whether it's medicine, education, agriculture, commerce, you name science, you name it. They have the brain power to craft their own uniquely tailored approach to many, many things.
Can't get them to do it.
They refuse to do it because they have already been corrupted and co-opted by foreign sources that are making tons and tons of money and that have used, that are now using these resources for their own good. I mean, you look at the environmental damage done to a lush country like Jamaica or Guyana. You look at the fact that Barbados, an island, there's no fish. You look at the quality of education. Again, Barbados used to have the highest literacy rates in the world. And you see that education is being structured so that you are creating new generations of servants.
Yes.
Of people who have no way at all of contributing to their own economic independence. So that's what's going on across the board. And it's a conversation that needs to start like yesterday.
Can I leave you with something?
Why the entire Caribbean seems to be going to hell in a handbasket at 80 miles an hour.
Yeah. Can I leave you with something?
Please.
Yeah. You know, some time ago, former Prime Minister of Jamaica, P.J. Pattis, was here in New York at the Schomburg of all places. And he was telling us about this new system called globalization. And he was telling us that we have to avail ourselves to globalization and the changes, and it's just coming and these opportunities and so on and so forth, and he went on. And so when they had a Q&A period, I said to Mr. Prime Minister, tell me something. What is the difference between imperialism and globalization? I said to him that I have seen the imperialism at work. I've seen it. We have, our people have lived through it for centuries. And now you're telling me about another system called globalization, which behaves, it acts, it behaves, it does the same thing that imperialism is doing to, has been doing to us. Now tell me, honestly, what is the difference? And he hemmed and he hawed for a moment, and finally he had to come around and say, well, yeah, you have a point. It does have an aspect of imperialism. So they use fancy words and fancy terms, but we have all these illustrious folks out there that are supposed to be our leaders, and they are leading us down to hell for the few pieces of silver that they are collecting. They're not even going for the going rate of 30 pieces like back in those days, biblical days, they said. Some of these folks are going for 2 and 3 and 5 pieces of silver to sell our people out.
And well, there's no region in the Caribbean more familiar with globalization, I think, because just about everybody had a hand in the exploitation and subjugation of the Caribbean. France, Spain, Portugal, Britain, Denmark.
Even Israel has been on the deal.
Everybody had a hand in just raping the entire region. In fact, that's the title of a book by my late friend Jan Carew, Rape of Paradise. It's an incredible statement. So when people are selling us the idea of globalization, we are experts at it, and we also are experts at the consequences of globalization. We have been just pillaged by just about every imperial power and imperialist power on the planet. Thanks so much for calling today.
Thank you, my professor.
He cracks me up with that title. Reggie, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Beatrice.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. Want to free my mind today and want to wish you an Nguzo Saba Happy New Year. And I hope that our people will practice the seven principles of Kwanzaa throughout
Thank you.
The year.
I'm getting a little echo. Are you on speaker?
Unfortunately, yes. Let me see if I can get off of the real fast. Okay, phone. Let's see, they return the call. So now I'm talking straight through the phone. Can you hear me better?
Yeah, if you talk straight through the phone, it would be great.
Okay, great. Yes, I'm calling on behalf of my three important members here in Brooklyn, New York, with a great Orson Maddox. I just like to call a few of their names and stuff, and Miguel Bo and Willie Mack Alpine and Veronica, Sister Butts. A few of these people are probably listening today. And I'm just free in my mind with some of the events that takes place throughout the week with people like Donald Trump and Cruz and they're discussing matters about where they're born at and different things. And to me, it's like I really don't want to fill my mind with things like that. But I would like to see that tomorrow night we do something about what people are talking about so people can be talking about us. You know, all our problems that exist and stuff like, you know, what are we doing to remedy those problems? And our chairman, it comes on your station quite a bit, he talks about the answers, and people hear the answers. And when the opportunity arrives for us to stand to begin to correct them, I can't find nobody. I'm sitting here in our office here in Brooklyn at our headquarters, and the phone doesn't ring. When it does ring, a young person is calling about Umar Johnson attending here next week. Promotion is important, and it's good that they're coming. But I want to see the Cotton Club, a place that was in existence before I was born, that we wasn't even able to go to as black people. And today, and that we are able to, there's hardly no one going there. And that's part of the solution to a Cruz and to a Trump, for us to understand that something to begin to unify and to see a progress in 2016. I don't want to repeat 2015. You know, I look at Bernie, I look at Hillary, I see him gaining, and I'm kind of happy. But that's, to me, when I was back there in Alabama, it's just a matter of like between the two evils. It's not my results. It's not what I produced. So I like to see people like, you know, to hear me tonight, come to the Cotton Club on 124th Street. Make sure that there's standing room only. And listen to a leader that has some guidance for us to get out of this hole we're in. You know, he's called for a national black political convention. And that means that, you know, all the black people and all people throughout this country together and force the media to listen to what we have to say. I recall when Bernie began, we hardly could even see his face on the TV. Now I see it every 10 minutes, Bernie Sanders. That could be us. You know, so I'm not going to take up much time. I just wanted to clear my mind today and wish that people show up Saturday at the Cotton Club in Harlem and then join us in a dinner dance that we try to do every year to reinstate a boys and girls camp upstate New York so our young children to have something to say that will take them into the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Reggie, for your call. 888-874-4888. Brooklyn, the other David from Brooklyn, is on the air.
Yes, hi, Trace.
Hello.
And how are you?
You're the other David, from Brooklyn?
I'm the other one, yes.
What have you to say today?
I want to know how you are first.
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks
Good.
For asking.
Your rant yesterday was eloquent. I could have listened to it for another hour.
Well, thank you.
Your taste in music is great, too.
Thank you.
I wanted to call about, I heard there's going to be national identification cards coming 2018. And everybody has to have it, or else you can't drive, you can't take a plane. And a question was asked, will the people accept this? And I say, of course. because what have they done so far to not accept things? They already know that the phones are tapped. They know what you're watching. If you use a credit card, they know what you're buying. They know where you're going. So why wouldn't they accept that? Because they're accepting everything else. I talk to people. I ask them. I say, do you know this, that, and the other thing? You're being followed. Oh, I have nothing to hide. That's the usual response. It's 90% of the people. They don't care. They have nothing to hide.
What concerns you about a national identity card?
Like everything else, being tracked everywhere and everything. Privacy is out the window. I'm one of those people who like privacy. I'm sure there's others out there. Doesn't seem like many, though. What is your take on that?
Well, some would say the argument, I'm sure, would be, and given the times we are living in, it's just another way of making you and I and the American people secure.
You know, that's the facade. They want to track us, whatever we're doing, and keep files and records of who might do something, and curtail it before it gets anywhere. Well, that's my take on it.
So what should people do about this?
Not accept it. It should be national. We don't want none of this. It's already we have to accept the NSA, everything you do on a computer, credit card, they got that, everything you purchase. And if you have the RFID chip, which all the credit cards do and a lot of other things do, you're being tracked everywhere. This is George Orwell.
I'll ask you the provocative question. Does your right and my right to privacy, as you define it, is that above the need by the government to take whatever measures it deems appropriate to assure security, that the people who are here should be here, and the people who should be here should have some way of identifying that they are, in fact, entitled to be here? How would you answer that question?
Isn't a driver's license good enough nowadays? I know it's not, but shouldn't it be? Social Security card, driver's license. Now you need an ID that you're here. You're already here with the Social Security and the driver's license. Why you got something on top of that?
Well, of course, you know, it has also been said, and it has also been projected, that not only are people going to have national identification cards, but global identification cards. You just need one ID, and that will be your global identification. So I guess this takes your paranoia to a whole other level.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. But, you know, the point that you're raising is very interesting, and I'm sure there will be some kind of resistance to it and a legal challenge to it on the count of, privacy rights. And to what degree does a government have the right to invade what people will consider to be their privacy and compel you to have a national identity? This is a really interesting question.
Yeah,
if you were to legally make a case against it, what would the grounds be?
Isn't it somewhere in the Constitution? The Bill of Rights? It's somewhere in there.
Somewhere
I know
in there? You have a gut feeling that this is just overreaching, is what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And people will accept it because it's under the facade of national security.
I see. And I think you're right on that score as well. But we'll see how it shapes up. Once it becomes the discussion, a national discussion, we'll see where it goes, because I'm sure, like you and me, I'm bothered by things like this. I find that there is a tendency, and it's becoming more and more the case in this climate that we're living in, where the government simply is not a respecter of boundaries, and certainly not a respecter of individual constitutional rights. And we'll see how people react to these kinds of demands by the government and these moves by the government to create methods of gathering information and basically invading privacy. We'll see. It's a very, very good thing that you raised today. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end of our program today. Thank you so much for calling and keeping the conversation at a very high level. I appreciate that more than you know. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Guns and Butter. And you can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Just send me a note. Let me know what you're thinking. As always, this is the weekend, and make it an effort to be kind to yourself and to absolutely separate yourself from negative people, or separate negative people from you. One way or the other, just don't find yourself anywhere near negative people over this weekend. You know, hang out with your friends and your family, or even by yourself doing some really good work, giving yourself permission to relax and to unwind. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. I thank you for listening. I thank you for contributing to Free Your Mind Friday. See you Monday. A special program is planned in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Bye-bye.